this Paul plays Professor Smith, and Dave plays the wonderful character of Paul, right? So we have some real main characters, Paul, and then I don't know why we did that, but it just seemed easier at the time. Dave plays Paul in this scene. And did I do what you asked for me to do?
I'm sorry?
Did I do what you asked me to do?
Yes, okay, good.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Talk to us a little bit just about what the philosophy is in terms of why there is drama and what you're trying to accomplish with your scripts.
Right. Well, this is the first time, if I'm not mistaken, and those who are Urbana sort of savvy, this was the first time that I think the drama component had actually been one complete story, to my knowledge. In the past, they've been several short vignettes. And this particular time, Lucille Badger, who is now the, I guess she's the plenary director, because everything is sort of brand spanking new this time around, new locations, and new staff, new folk involved, we wanted to try and find a way to make the story one cohesive story. And it just seemed like if there was ever a time to take advantage of the opportunity, now would be that time. What's great about this story and how we came about developing it at this writer's retreat, I asked those members who were present, a good number of us are all here actually, to think of a character or an individual that has three attributes that you admire, and also that same individual has three attributes that you think the individual could use some tweaking or improving. And so they went away and they thought about those characters, and we came back with these sort of bios, if you will, of who these people are. Paul's character, the character Paul, not the actor Paul, he was someone who had an amazing gift for bridging different cultures and backgrounds, etc., sort of a peacemaker, if you will, but he was not at all a punctual individual. There were some other issues in terms of sort of being stubborn and pigheadedness, and just to use that as an example. So once we came up, each of the individuals who contributed came up with these characters, I then asked them to think about actual scenarios or instances that they saw, and we could consider those as possibly using or creating a quick story around them. So what was initially, I believe, like 7 or 8 completely separate storylines, different experiences that I thought of, things Kathy thought of, and Dave thought of, I said, that's going to be our play. And I said, what? And for me, the theme was, because we had the Book of Ephesians to guide us, that would be the sort of touch point to make sure that we're following the through lines. But at the same time, these instances, all the scenarios and storylines, they're taken from real life events and situations. And we use the Book of Ephesians, the journey, if you will, as the linking and connective tissue to develop the story. So that's how it came about.
Yeah. Fire away, press.
Press on.
I probably answered all the good questions up front right now.
How do you anticipate the use of theater or plays in this setting, per se, and affecting students? Outlook on evangelism or just living life.
Right. Well, that's something, and you guys can also chime in on that one, but I think in my role at the university, a lot of the work I do, I'm an actor by training, but a lot of the work I focus on deals with what I refer to as sensitive subject matter or areas of content that are fairly difficult to address in public settings. Issues like hostile work environment, cultural diversity, issues of orientation, sort of the mucky issues that we all have opinions about, but for whatever reason, we aren't quite comfortable or we haven't quite developed that skill set to have those conversations in a way without feeling threatened or put upon or whatever may come up to mind. My sense is, based on that experience and seeing the transformational power, not only for the people who are in the audience, but the participants, to know that these are real life stories and to hear some of their own stories, because we also pulled from some of the experiences of the actual actors and we tweaked some of the stories so they could have a sense of ownership in them. Having gone through that process, that's a very empowering process, and one of the words that I think I've heard it referred to, this particular scene for those, or play rather, people who've sort of been privy to it but not part of the process was that this is quote-unquote real. Like, this really speaks to us in a way that we feel like we haven't heard before as far as theater ministry is concerned, because you walk that fine line. You want to make sure that you are true to the gospel to a certain point, and you want that to still have its be the primary focus. At the same time, you have to find a way to meet contemporary audiences that are dealing with things in a very, you know, contemporary fashion. I mean, the idea of, you know, your cell phone and your Bible, you know, the idea of some of the characters are dealing with issues, what Professor Smith may be going through, having a student perhaps having an impact on him reconsidering his journey as not necessarily a Christian, but what that means, you know. So I think we say at some point, we don't say you're an atheist, but it started out that language there. But it's clear he's not at all feeling Christianity. But without giving too much away, that may shift a little. So I think it'll catch people sort of where they are. And that's what I hope to do with the play, that it invites you in a way to feel you can own where you are, but that there's still room for you to grow. So there aren't any fingers being pointed. There's no judgment in the sense that we're better than you. It's more along, well, here are the issues. Let's talk about them, because I'm going through some other stuff you might not be going through, and perhaps you could help me.
It gives a freedom and accessibility in evangelism, I think, for students. It's easier to invite your roommate to come to a show on campus. Easier to invite your roommate to a show on campus than it might be to invite them to church with you or to hear a speaker at large group. More folks are likely to come to this, a little more accessible. I think they see a model of what they do. I said after today's scene that I anticipate you'll have many students saying to their friends, hey, sleeping around would be like using your laptop as a door jam, which was a line in this morning's, and I think they'll actually pick that up and say it. And then we definitely hope that students will learn how to do what we've done. Instead of asking for the script to our play, that they'll go back and say, what's going on my campus?
Yeah.
How could I write about that? And both Dave and I do that with our students.
Or even in their local church.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. All of us, I think, do this for our churches as well.
Well, in response to your question, too, about what do we want this to do in students' campus, in particular the Christian students, I would say a high number of them live in a Christian bubble somewhat, you know, and they're so turned off by a lifestyle that's contrary to Christianity of people around them. They separate themselves from them, and I think it takes away their influence. So what excites me about, like, the scenes this morning is that Patrick's character this morning, Bobby, it doesn't appear to be following Christ at this point in the play, but you could see his humanity. And what I hope they saw in the way my character interacted was that I wasn't making his lifestyle the main issue. I was making his purpose and what God wants for him the main issue. And I think a lot of times I see my students put it in the wrong order, and the church does. People don't need to change their lifestyle first. They need to get right with God, and then the other things come. So I hope it's a model to them of how to change the conversation.
It was very humorous, too, by the way. It was very funny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you gotta. Humor goes a long way. Especially when you deal with, you know, things like that are very touchy, because, I mean, you know, you have no idea, because they're strong sort of camps, if you will, right? And trying to find the middle ground can be like looking for the needle in the haystack. So if you get people laughing, if we're all laughing, then, okay, we got something in common, right? And you can usually use that as a starting point to encourage people to sort of, I say, let their hair down, and it puts you at an ease where you're not on the defensive, where your particular viewpoint has to be defended because it's not being questioned. What's being done, I think, are the several questions that are being brought to the forefront. And we're trying to look at what some of these issues are from a variety of perspectives, and it's honoring those different perspectives and then creating something together afterwards that I think becomes the catalyst for change in that sense. A lot of the work, particularly racial reconciliation work that I do, that's the starting point. What personal investment do you have in this? And if you have a personal investment, are you willing to hear a perspective that could be potentially unique from yours? And if you are, then there's a path to be charted that's co-constructed, that we both feel like we have a sense of investment in the process and experience. Yes.
All right, I know I have a little bit of an inside take, but I wanted to ask, you talked about some of what you deal with at UW, mm-hmm. University of Wisconsin, are some of the sort of the touchy issues.
Yeah.
And you brought that to Urbana, I think, by some of the themes that have been revealed thus far in the skits, but and then some others that will continue to be unveiled. And I thought maybe it would be interesting to hear sort of some of those things. Like, for instance, one is homosexuality, because a lot of people might say, well, oh, wow, you're talking about that at a Christian event.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that's not the only one you're talking about. Right. I don't want to give away all your themes, because I don't know how much you want people to,
right.
to tell people. I know that one was... But maybe you could address some of those different themes that a lot of people would say, I cannot believe you didn't bring that up in church. and how it came about.
Well, you know, I sort of harken back to the comment that Dave made earlier. In some respects, I mean, I was raised in the church, right? So whatever that means, I grew up going to church every Sunday, whether my mother, you know, pulled me by my ear or I really wanted to go. It was only until in my early 20s that I really began to develop a relationship on my own. Having said that, there was sort of the bubble effect. So some of these themes, again, we all know about them, right? We all know they're there and we all have opinions about them. But what is it that's preventing us from having these conversations? And as we know, we talk within a Christian sector about the enemy, Satan being the enemy of deception. So if I have a particular idea in my head about, say, if we're dealing with the theme of homosexuality or if we're dealing with the theme of cultural bias, for example, and you may hear those words and they conjure up different meanings for you, that could be the complete 180 of what I'm thinking. Then we'll never find that middle ground because I think X and you're thinking Y, but we're using the same language. So finding a way to at least put it on the table so we can at least breathe to have the conversation, I think is important. The part about what some of the themes are, well, certainly today that was kind of self-evident, you know, why do Christians hate gays? Another theme I think you were saying we should probably correct, we won't give too much away. Well, you want to correct one of the things that are up there?
We've heard from people out there that there's a suspicion that Marissa is pregnant. Marissa is not pregnant. She may be struggling with some other issue, but she's not expecting.
Okay. That's all we're going to say about that.
And you don't spread it because you want to keep the rest of the 20,000 in suspense.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a soap opera.
Yeah.
I would want to say, too, that you know we talk about the bubble and then out there, but these issues are inside the bubble. And I think one of my motivations in this was students come in, they hear from the podium, oh, missions, I must be up here and a glorious person like that person who spoke from the podium. But really, I'm here and I'm struggling with that thing Marissa is struggling with, or I'm spending all my time being attracted to that person I'm sitting next to. Mm-hmm. And what we wanted to do is bridge and say, no, the people who do, there's a line on Saturday night, where Marissa says, if you want to talk about missions, I'll talk about missions, but leave me out of it. And my character says, they aren't separate things. It can be about you, too.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
Got it. Yes.
I'm just interested in the theme, Live Well, Worthy of a Calling. Mm-hmm. What are some of your thoughts about those that are here and sort of looking at you, what you're modeling and say, you know, how do I make this? How do I know if this is my calling? And what does that look like?
In terms of the theater component or just in general?
I think the students that are here that are looking to say, hey, this is fresh. Maybe, you know, maybe this could be my calling.
Uh-huh. Well, you want to take a stab at that one, buddy?
You mean to become an actor or?
Just, I think, looking how that plays out. I mean, I guess if the theme is calling at Urbana, how does that work with what you're doing? Are you modeling
Got it.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah. Oh, no. Go.
A couple things that I see come up in the overall, all the 16 themes we have. It seems like there are three issues that stand out to me. One is this struggle that Christians have to work through of what does it mean to be in the world but not compromise. The second is, what does it mean to be broken people? Because all of these characters have their rough spots. And third, what does it look like for us to really enter into community as broken people? Is it worth taking the risk and being vulnerable? You know, is this just a lip service thing? So I think that's all about calling. Live, what is the...
worthy of your calling.
Yeah. Live worthy of your calling. It's to invest in the community and to take chances and risks. It's to not compromise but still love others, and it's to be vulnerable with your brokenness to others and let God into it.
Jim Tebbe has said repeatedly, you have a calling is never singular in Ephesians. Paul writes that to a community.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully demonstrating a community of folks, of students, who are trying to figure that out with each other.
In the context of mission, too, because they all have these, or most of them have these goals together of reaching out beyond themselves. So they're dealing with all this other stuff and getting hopefully more whole through doing the mission.
Right. And to tie that specifically for folks, students who are interested in, say, perhaps a path in theater, my hope is that you can write things that are truthful. My grandmother used to say, if you tell the truth will set you free, right? Mm-hmm. So don't lie, because that's the worst thing you could do, especially when they knew you were lying, right? So the strength of any theater piece that I work with, and why I love doing what I do as not only an actor but as a playwright, as a director, is I love to take what real life presented to individuals and see how they responded to it, right? And we can tweak for dramatic purposes to, you know, make the story more compelling, etc. But the genesis of everything that you're seeing, They're from real events. Real people have gone through these. The conversation today, believe it or not, was a real conversation that the gentleman who co-wrote that scene, most of that was true. We tweaked, obviously, to, you know, make sure we were emphasizing more points than others, because, again, that was pretty loaded canon for us. But if you can look at that as a model that, if you start with, you know, some call it social justice. That's the word terminology I use in the university setting, that it's social justice theater. But here I could say it's the truth theater, right? And if you stick to that and you remain truthful but at the same time respectful of given environments and different values on those approaches, then you have something that's potentially special and always unique, because no one else is saying those things. And it comes in a form that traditionally people may get turned off from seeing, you know, the minister in the robe with the Bible in his or her hand. And you could have, you know, four folk who look just like you, you know, struggling with themes or issues, may not be the same ones, but we're speaking a truth of sorts, and that truth can touch each and every one in a completely different way. Never have I seen some of the pieces that we use in the university setting, I'm sure the case will be with this play, we've performed them more than once. And every time we perform, there's always a different response. Same lines, same setup, but someone is always going to view that from their lived experience. And that's what the difference is. So honoring that becomes a big part of it. Yes, sir?
Alex McLeod, Presbyterian Record from Canada. I don't know if any of you have this historical perspective on Urbana, but do you know when theater started at Urbana? And can you give me some sense of how that's evolved over Urbana's? And how does that reflect the wider evangelical worship scene in North America, if it does?
What was Bruce's first Urbana, do you know? 93? 96? I believe 93. Does anyone know that for sure? In the 90s, we began with Bruce Kuhn, and his main style is to do dramatic reading of scripture. He's one of the folks who trained me and Dave. And I think that reflected that in the evangelical church in North America, the word was still the center of the service, the word preached. And so what we began with was just giving people a different way to see the word. I still think that's an incredibly powerful way. I do that at my church frequently. As time went on, you begin to see in evangelical churches, because it's true in our culture, that the theater isn't, and the arts aren't just a sideline leading up to the preaching of the word. But most postmodern believers would say, no, all of this is worship. Our singing is worship. Our art is worship. People are experiencing God in all of those ways. So the preaching is not necessarily always the central element of the service. In some churches, it still is. So you can do the kind of thing we're doing and have it tied to a speaker. That's exactly what we've done with how we've divided the scenes, and you'll see that that this evening's scene sets up Brenda Salter McNeil's sermon. But you could also have a service where each of the elements can sort of stand on its own and be a way to lead people into the presence of God. And I think you see that reflected in the fact that there are 16 worship people here, 16 dancers, 16 mm-hmm. theater people, as well as the speakers, because that speaks to this generation.
Right. And as far as the evangelical movement, I think it's a sign of the times of sorts. I mean, we're, you know, in the profession of theater, and you certainly understand this, Paul, as a professional actor as well, our theaters are changing. They're going bankrupt. We can't produce or tell stories, I'll say, the way we used to, because you got the internet, you have film, major motion picture, you have video games. I mean, grown men are waiting in lines at Best Buy to drop $500 on a video game. Like, that baffles me. Like, I blow my money on frivolous things too, but like five in the morning to buy video games? Anyway, that's me.
He was really grown on the outside.
Right? But so, we're finding a way to sort of go back to the basics. One of the things I talk about in acting is, after you hit a certain level, you've done all the things you need to do to become, you know, this amazing talent, you start over. You break it all down and go back to the basics. And so returning to the word, returning to the spoken word, yeah. in a sense, having the Bible, the text of the Bible that serves, again, as the benchmark, the thing that you sort of compare and contrast with, that's important, particularly when you're in Christian arenas. But saying those same elements, telling those same stories with different twists and nuances, is always going to connect greater with younger generations, because we process things differently. You know, some churches, a friend of mine, she attends a church where they make a deliberate point to still read hymns. And I remember the first time I went to a church where I was freaked out that, like, the words were on a jumbotron. Right, that we didn't have little pieces of paper. And so after going to that church, I went back to a church where they gave us pieces of paper for a while, and then they transitioned. So it's like, wow, we're keeping up with, you know, the Joneses, but not in a way that we're trying to compete, but it's a demand. It's finding a way to really get at the heart of a person and doing that in a way that's genuine and real. Because, you know, I use the term, we don't want to fake the funk. Right, and faking the funk is the worst thing you can do, because you just seem like every other, you know, whatever fill in the blank individuals may have in their mind, particularly who are on the line or suspect or questioning ideas or notions of spirituality, not necessarily Christianity, but Christianity is probably one they're most suspect of, because it's, you know, it's the one that's out there the most, and it's the one that gets when things go wrong, we hear about it, you know, so. Yes.
I have a question, kind of piggybacking on what you just talked about. Well, how do you feel that as Christians, you can be able to retain the integrity and the core of the message in this society that may be a little bit more forward or doing things in a different way? And for example, like, I call them gospel souls. Now, they're getting the secular people coming to see this gospel souls, you know, and is it really about Christianity or really about Christ or God? No.
Right.
But it's a way to get people back in the theater. They make a good money, you know, but real theater people probably wouldn't want to do a play like that.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
So how can, and my background is in theater too.
Okay.
How can integrity be maintained and still be able to be out there?
Right.
And still be in the game?
Well, you know, Denzel is one of my favorite actors. And I don't know, maybe you know, he's the son of a preacher. We're born and raised in the church, and he's had a phenomenal career, and he is beholden to his Christian faith. He's not at all shy to admit that. But yet, if you look at his body of work, 99.9% of that is within the secular arena. But he's been able to make the kinds of movies he's made because he's said no to more parts than he has accepted parts. So in terms of that integrity, that becomes an individual decision. You know, one of the things I teach right now, I mean, Tyler Perry, he's a hot commodity right now. If you don't know who Tyler Perry is, He has a great character by the name of Medea, who is modeled off his mother and aunts, and he is, some say, in drag. Some sort of take offense to it. But he, some could say this would fall in the genre of the gospel
song.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Ultimately, you know, there's a journey. There's a progression that has to happen. You're saying this is the first time in the 90s that theater has been embraced at Urbana, right?
On the main stage.
The art form, for quite a while, has had a taboo of sorts within non-secular communities, because what's glorified, what's put on, are all the things that are, you know, the sex, the sin, the drugs, rock and roll, those kinds of elements. And, you know, obviously there's some hesitation to embrace that and say, come on in, right? If that's the essence of your message. My hope in terms of the integrity component is that you have people who, like ourselves, are God-fearing individuals. We understand what that world lives, because I'm constantly surrounded by people who are not Christian, right? So I don't, you know, one of the lines in the play, I don't beat them over the head with my faith, but they know I'm Christian. So there's certain things that they just don't do around me, but that's just who I am as a person. And that becomes part of that individual process, to have the support systems that are in place to make those stands and then feel confident that you made the right decision. There's another component into it where faith becomes a factor, right? Because if you have to take a job to pay the bills, you know, I've done several commercials that I'm not proud of as an actor, you know, and I've done my high.
Not to self,
right? Right? You know, the McDonald's or whatever, the toothpaste thing, you know, selling something like, this tastes like crap, but it's so good, right? You know? Those are those kinds of decisions you have to negotiate. But ultimately, you know, coming to this process, just my own testimony is, you know, we put in a ton of work, and our last rehearsal was in October of 22nd to be exact, and we didn't rehearse until, was it yesterday morning?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so it's like, okay.
Faith.
Yeah, right.
Faith.
So letting that go and just trust it. So, yeah.
I don't think it's any different than any other job decision, you know, or life decision. We're in theater, other people are in medicine or business making the same decisions. You stay grounded in the word, and you stay grounded in community, and you hear what the Spirit's saying to you about what to do and not do.
So how are you feeling as a Christian, Christian performers, and you had a company, how are you keeping the bills paid?
How am I keeping the bills paid?
Waiting tables.
Waiting tables.
Waiting tables. I've been blessed. You know, one of the things, you know, Bible says people perish for lack of wisdom, right? Lack of knowledge. I've been blessed. I mean, I'm at a university. I'm fairly young. And it was a strategic move on my part. I'm married. There were certain life goals I wanted to have accomplished that I didn't want to repeat cycles in my family line. I'm the youngest and the first to go to college. I wanted to get married because, you know, I had this big dream. Well, if I get rich and famous first, and how will I know that my wife will love me because I'm, you know, me as opposed to whatever little fantasies I had going on.
I don't know, it's real. Right? It's real.
But for me, you know, I was at a crossroads where I could have joined a fairly prestigious theater company or take a job at a university. And hands down, my prayer was, Lord, I said, I wanted to still be able to maintain a professional career as an artist, but I also enjoy teaching. I get a lot out of teaching because education had a significant impact on me as an individual. And, you know, I grew up on the south side of Chicago in the hood of the hoods, right? And had my mom not made certain decisions in her lifetime to get me to where I am, I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing now. And it was because of my educational environment that shifted. So I said, I want to be able to do both.
Yale undergrad.
So, and the prayer was answered. God gave me a job where I teach professionally, but part of my requirement is to continue to act professionally. So that's God's favor that's shown in my life. Others has different testimony. I mean, because Paul, he's been a professional actor before you even started school. So you've been out there. You've worked in settings like this. You've gone back to school, and you just graduated. So what's your journey like for you right now?
Well, it's really beginning, literally, because since I graduated, he looked over his shoulder when we were walking into the stadium for my graduation. He's like, hey, you want to do a gig over Christmas? I'm like, yeah, sure, okay, great. And so I had no idea what it was about or whatever, but in a way, it for the last, when was that? That was in May?
Yeah, May.
So since last May till now, I've always had it in my head that I've got a job, and I've sort of went from job to job to job to job in acting and theater and teaching. So, but now that's kind of gone away, and now this is my last job for this year, and I don't have anything ahead of schedule. I got a little teaching gig, but the next acting gig is kind of out there. It's like, ooh, what's going to happen? But as far as having integrity, I mean, I have no split in my concept of secular and spirituality. Mm-hmm. I am a child of God. So no matter where I walk, I'm a child of God. Mm-hmm. There's no worlds. It's a world. And I'm not concerned about anybody else's belief system. I'm concerned about mine. And if someone wants to roll with mine, great. If they don't, great. So I don't spend a whole lot of time in conflict with that whatsoever. And like you said, you know, in concerns with Denzel, I mean, there have been some jobs that I've said no to. Mm-hmm. And that could be on many different levels, you know. But I'm okay with, I know that my needs are going to be met no matter what I choose to do. And I've given myself that permission to say, you know, if I don't want to do something for whatever reason, I'm not going to do it. Mm-hmm. So I don't have a big conflict with the secular and the spiritual worlds as far as being an artist.
I had something to ask related to what Kathy, you said a minute ago about theater being able to touch on some controversial topics in sort of a non-threatening way. With subject matter like that, like today with the homosexuality and things like that, are you hoping to reach out to those people in quiet desperation and touch them where they're at? Or is your goal more to reach out to Christians who don't really know how to approach or talk to people struggling with tough situations?
Both, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah, I would hope both.
Yeah, both. That's what I'm saying. That's you just phrased it perfectly. It's that issue, but you have a couple perspectives on that, right?
Yeah.
And those perspectives kind of bump heads quite vehemently. So what's the middle ground, right? And well, we don't know what that middle ground is until we begin to have a conversation. And we don't begin to have a conversation until we put the issue on the table. And we don't put the issue on the table because it's the domino effect.
Mm-hmm.
What's great about theater is, you know, I could say that as a character,
mm-hmm.
right? And when it's all said and done, whatever me, right? That wasn't me, right? But the character said that. The character brought that up. And so the great device of theatrical expression is that you've got the idea, but it came in a way where, you know, you're not going to go beat up the minister afterwards or threaten, you know, that person or, you know, whatever scenarios or outcomes you can conjure up. But the issue is still on the table, and it's brought in a way where, you know, we're all saying it for ourselves. And so wherever you sit on it, that's where you respond. Wherever I sit on it, that's where I respond from. And the conversations that ensue, that's where I say the magic happens because, you know, wow, this is how I saw it. Because ultimately what it boils down to in terms of those initial responses is, I saw X, you may have seen Y, let's talk about it. Mm. Right? And then that's where you can bring in the other support, the doctrinal foundation, yeah, and so forth.
Sorry, well, Dave and I have to excuse ourselves. We're supposed to be in rehearsal.
I got to get that in a minute, too. But to piggyback on that, in a personal experience, like whether it's racism or homosexuality or any of the issues that are tough
the isms,
for us,
right?
Yeah, all the ism things. But personally, my perceptions were able to work through once I gained relationship with someone who was other than, mm-hmm. right? So my first experience in college, you know, a good friend of mine introduced me to a good friend of theirs. Ooh, you know, Caucasian person, African-American, you know. So, like, once I was introduced to somebody and we started hanging out as people, you know, going dancing, going eating, hanging out. Within a couple weeks, all of a sudden we're friends, but we're different. And then the same thing happened with a homosexual person, you know. It's like, oh, okay, you know, but then we're friends. And that the initial ism goes away once there's relationship involved, mm-hmm. you know. And if there's a way that bridge can happen through theater, great. If it can happen anyway else, great. But I think if we can get to the relationship part so the isms can kind of just, you know, yeah. relax the ism. If that makes any sense, but because I think, I mean, even you said it in the script that I can't even remember the exact line, but the focus should be on the individual's journey, yeah. and it's a spiritual journey, no matter what issues they're bringing into that journey. Mm-hmm. And I think even I'm playing the character Tom, the professor, right, and. Within the last 2 days, I've been called a pagan, annoying, mean, you know, and I'm like, wait, character, you know, not actor, character. But it's just interesting how the judgment becomes the first thing as opposed to what is the theme that we're working on. But does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did I answer all the good questions? Huh?
Do you do any talkbacks when you perform?
Well, in what setting? Within a Christian setting? So Paul doesn't. I keep those things distinct because the universe is very clear,
mm-hmm.
right? About quote unquote proselytizing.
Study guides and topics.
Yeah. Well, the format that I use at the university is actually this is a play, so it's about an hour and 15 minutes. If you saw the thing in one sitting, the format I use at the university is actually four short scenarios that. Are thematically linked, but not necessarily character-wise. Between each play, there are a series of questions that we give the audience, and the questions are the things that the actors, the people who helped write the play, were thinking about or batting around, perhaps wanted to have a conversation about with participants. But by no means are those the questions that we only want folk to think about. So you have a play, you have about 10 to 15 minute discussion of those questions and ideas, and then there's another 10 to 15 minutes to sort of report out. So that community building, what Paul was just talking about, is woven into the fabric of how we sensitize ourselves to having conversations that are potentially volatile. And as those three or four plays progress, they become a little more complex, and ultimately there's a facilitator that's there working with me. Sometimes it's myself, usually I have a colleague that helps guide some of those discussions, and people end up feeling very encouraged afterwards, or they have another set of language or a way to think about some of the issues or content that perhaps they might not have considered before. And that's always been the gem of the work that I do, why I love doing that just as much as being on stage.
Thank you for showing up today.
Thank you for having me.
And I appreciate it very much.
Okay, thanks.